scrambles left, winds up right behind. He's got time at the 10 to the 5. Yes! To the end zone. Touchdown. Darren Sproles gone. Touchdown, Eagles.
This is the Root and Why Podcast, talking all things NFL. Now here's your hosts, Root and Why.
Yo, 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 welcome to episode 48 of the Wooten Washer. This might be our biggest show to date. Dane Brugler from CBS Sports is joining us to talk all things draft, and we are excited.
We're super excited. It's quite late here.
It is. To secure Dane's time, we had to start recording at about 12:30 in the morning. So if you don't think we're dedicated, you can
off. Well. Straight away,
attacking the fans.
We're 60 seconds in, we're using the beep. So if you don't think we're trying to bring you the best content possible, yeah, go get... Maybe not.
To our new listeners, welcome, that are listening to us talking about Dane. So, before we get to the NFL news,
yeah,
we bought Blaine Gabbert jerseys.
Of course we did.
$20 jerseys on NFL, you know, they have it in clearance sale.
No. They don't need to know that. They were $120 Blaine Gabbert jerseys with really
Jacksonville jerseys, not 49ers.
Yeah, not those horrible Nike material either. Yep.
And they're Reebok, so you know it's top notch quality.
Yeah, so you know the stitching's good.
I'm stitching. So in honor of Blaine Gabbert, last year we had Team of the Podcast, the Miami Dolphins. So in 2015, we're announcing our Player of the Podcast is Blaine Gabbert. So every week we're going to do a Blaine Gabbert update, and here's our first one.
Blaine is a real American.
Don't draft me, I'm going to have to beat you for the next 15 years.
Okay. Beware of the QB, he will make it Blaine. Blaine is a real American. Leading the fight, let's win tonight.
Leading the fight.
What's Blaine been up to this week?
I can tell you that I don't think he's been up to very much at all.
And that's the Blaine Gabbert update for the week. Let's get into some NFL news. From one legend to another, Michael Strahan says OBJ is the greatest athlete on Earth, on the planet Earth right now. Do you agree with him?
You know what? If this was someone that wasn't a giant, I would say, you know what?
So you're scared of Strahan?
No, Strahan got his record by a debatable half sack.
Yes.
Right? Now, I'm not doubting that OBJ is incredible, but to say he's the most gifted athlete on the planet?
Mm. How do you test it?
Probably a world athlete combine.
Oh, yes, that would be awesome.
Imagine, you'd have to have a hundred...
What would you do? It's like the Rexona.
You'd have to have a 100-yard sprint for Usain and the likes, because he gathers his speed at the end.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. But, can't discredit someone like Novak Djokovic or even Michael Phelps in his heyday. Like, when he was a swimmer, he was, you know, multi-gold medal. It's like there's all sorts of sports to consider.
Jumps. Swimming, yeah, and you know, like gymnasts are freaks.
Yeah, gymnasts. What about The Rock? Hello, no.
If you're some man, what The Rock is cooking.
Yeah.
All right. So this is The Rock. This is week 59 of NFL free agency. So the news is solid.
I don't even think we need that thing now that The Rock's been mentioned. The Rock is the greatest athlete in the world. Michael Strahan's Rock.
The Rock. And the breaking news continues this week. There's barely any news when you've got Michael Strahan and Denarius Moore leading your first two stories. But Denarius Moore reunites with old pal Hugh Jackson in Cincinnati. Thoughts on that?
That's incredible news, actually.
Moving on. LaShawn McCoy has some choice words about former head coach Chip Kelly. He says, and I quote, "I think he likes the fact that it's Chip Kelly and the Eagles. It was DeSean Jackson, a high-flying take off the top of the defense receiver, or the quick, elusive LaShawn McCoy. I don't think Kelly likes that." So basically, LaShawn's saying that Chip Kelly likes being center of attention. Are we taking that out of context?
No, I don't think we're taking it too much out of context. I think he clearly does somewhat like being that enigma, that, you know, no one knows what he's doing kind of thing. However, when you, like, it's...
He does refer to himself in the third person.
He does.
I'm the only chip in the NFL, in the Eagles.
Yeah, no, but it's kind of, it's kind of shining through now that LeSean McCoy is kind of similar to how DeSean Jackson was. And there was always those personality concerns about DeSean Jackson.
Do you think they're a little bit of divas?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's always a huge hindrance on a team when there's divas on the
team. Yeah, I don't think LeSean should take it too personally, because I don't think he's taking out players because of their diva-like behaviour. I think he is purely now taking the reins as GM, and he wants system guys. He trusts his system. That's how he's got to the NFL. By succeeding for many years at Oregon with that system. So I think that's what he's doing. I don't know. I like Chip Kelly. I think he's saucy. I like him.
How many divas? Okay, well, you can...
A lot of wide receivers are divas.
No, I know. You can say that Brady's kind of a diva, but how many divas are really on New England?
Rob Gronkowski's a bit of a diva. But he's like...
He's more a rock star.
He's like an old school larrikin. Yeah. Like, you know, what about him the other day? I didn't put that in the news, but I asked him about concussions, and he says, I'm not worried about them. I don't remember how I got to my hotel last night. he's just unique. Julian Edelman's a little bit of a diva, but, like, when you look at the defense and the skill players, it's all...
Hush, hush.
Yeah, hush, hush. But that's the...
That's the whole one team.
Mantra that Belichick wants to instill, and I think Chip wants to go about that the same way.
I'm more and more beginning to look at Chip Kelly as an offensive-minded Belichick.
Yeah, that's fair, whereas Belichick's a defensive... Yeah. Yep, I get that.
Say that, but then the Patriots aren't the most defensive team. It's
no, but when they've won their Super Bowls, DVOA, they've been top... I think their lowest is 15 or 16. When they won 3 Super Bowls, they've had top 10 defenses.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
It's all about that defense with them.
It's all about the D for them. Percy Harvin promises he will explode again. And I quote, "The world is yet to see me really explode like I'm about to."
That was Harvin exploding.
I'm sick of hearing Percy Harvin speak about Percy Harvin.
He doesn't have that much to back it up. Like, I think he is the player that can...
He's had one good year with Brett Favre in Minnesota, and he's done nothing since.
It's so difficult to... I think if he was put in the right situation and he didn't have that injury-prone history... I don't know.
But, Mike, when they use him on the outside with the Jets, he showed glimpses, but I don't know. He seems to only be... have a certain role where they use him in screens and bubbles and things like that. And that's where he's used best. And I think Greg Roman might be able to exploit that and use him effectively. He's a great offensive coordinator. But it's April. Just settle down. Just relax. Just calm down. Like, get through OTAs and training camp without breaking your foot or your arm for the 100th-millionth time, and then we'll see how we go.
I just think Percy Harvin is destined to become like Devin Hester and just become that punt returner.
Yeah. Well, a lot of older receivers, that's sort of their path, especially the quick receivers. Any other news before we get Dane on the line?
It's showtime.
No, not really. Bring it on, Dane.
Bring it on. So joining us on the line is Dane Brugler, senior NFL draft analyst for CBS Sports and the owner-operator of NFLDraftScout.com, and is the author of the most comprehensive NFL draft guide in existence. It is 187 pages, I can confirm. I got it printed off today, and it is like a paperback novel, and we are delighted to have him on the line. So, hello, Dane.
Hey, guys, I appreciate you guys having me on, and I appreciate you buying the guide. Anyone that's interested, just check out my Twitter at DP Brugler, and I appreciate anyone that, you know, wants to check it out. And it's really a labor of love, and, you know, kind of see what, you know, it's basically the last 10 months of my life wrapped up into this 187-page PDF document, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, and it's some advice for a lot of our Australian and overseas listeners that you'll probably have trouble purchasing it on that website, so you need to email someone about that to get that fixed. Is that correct?
Yes, yeah, I apologize about that. I don't know, what the issue is.
It's probably a legal issue from Australia. Like, we can't purchase things overseas anymore. There's some sort of weird thing about that at the moment.
Yeah, and I wish I had more of a control over that. So I kind of just send my book off and other people will control, that side of things. So, yeah, if you have any trouble, feel free to tweet me or email me and, make sure you're taken care of.
Yep, and before we get into some serious draft questions, we've noticed while talking about you with other friends and some draft, we'll say fans or nutcases, your surname actually gets changed to the word burglar on our phone. Has that come up often to you? Yeah,
it's my name is my first name and my last name are often mispronounced or misspelled or construed into something different. So it's something when I was little and grade school and all the way until now, something I'm used to.
Awesome,
Dane. Just a question back to your guide. How long does something like that take to put together, roughly?
It's literally a year-round thing for me. Once the draft is over in the spring, I will start working on the next draft, and I start on seniors, watching their tape and getting kind of a base of who the players are, and then once the season starts, really growing that. And I have a notepad where it's just filled from front page to final page with just my notes of scouting, and once I receive the coach's tape, then I can really start studying, and by that time I already have a base knowledge for these players, and once I receive the coach's tape, I can really start studying and putting my final evaluations on these guys. And so the biggest thing I've learned doing these over the years is how much time to spend on a player before I know who the player is, and then moving on, just making sure I can get as many players in with only so much time. NFL teams, they have a whole scouting department dedicated to looking at thousands of players every year, where I'm trying to do this all myself. And so I think the biggest thing I've learned is knowing when I have a good grasp on who the player is, and then moving on so I can attack as many players as possible.
Yeah, well, you haven't left many stones unturned. Just about every single player that's declared is mentioned in your guide somewhere along the lines.
Yeah, and that's the goal, is to obviously a lot of people know about the first round prospects, but my goal with this guide is to, when a no-name guy at McNeese State gets drafted in the sixth round, my goal is for you to be able to go to my guide and, look him up and feel confident about who he is based on my evaluation. And so, my scouting reports, I want to paint a picture for you. If you don't know who the player is, I want you to be able to take, 2 minutes, skim over my scouting report, and you automatically have a good idea on the type of player that he is and what type of player he should be in the NFL.
Yeah, that's how I've been reading it at the moment. Is I've just been reading sort of the summary of each player, and then when I see that name pop up again, and I read the whole thing, from top to bottom about that player. I like to get a little bit of a summary on each player, and see what I like and dislike, and then I'll go to sort of like draftbreakdown.com and see what I can watch. Obviously, we don't have access to coaches' tape, but it's from what we can find these days, it's good to get a greater grasp of the overall draft, not just the elite talents.
Yeah, really, that's great. That's something that I get a lot of questions all the time about different players, and I really encourage everyone to go to sites like draftbreakdown.com and these other sites out there who allow you to watch some of these players. And You know, scouting is so subjective. You know, no two eyes see the same thing. And so by no means is, you know, my scouting eyes, you know, better than anyone else. I really encourage everyone to, you know, develop your own scouting base and see, you know, we might see two different things, while on one player we see exactly the same thing. So that's what makes scouting fun, because then, you know, we can debate players and figure out, you know, what we see against what another person sees. And so, you know, the two, you know, smartest people in the NFL might see differently on a player, and that's okay, because that's what scouting is. It's very subjective, and you know, that's what creates discussion and debate, and that's really what makes this whole process fun.
Yeah. How much do you know about a character of a player when you're putting in your? We got a couple of questions about that from people, then we asked them to send us some questions, and they want to know how much knowledge you have of a character concern and how much weight you put into it. And then going off that, someone like PJ Williams, who you know, got done for drink driving, how much weight do teams put into that so late in the process after fully evaluating their character?
Right, and that can be the toughest part, at least from, you know, my perspective, or someone like us on the outside. You know, we don't have as many resources as NFL teams do in terms of delving into the character of these players. You know, I've talked to scouts who have hired private detectives, you know, spent tens of thousands of dollars hiring private detectives to follow these guys and, you know, really do the most diligent research possible. And so I, from my perspective, I really rely on, you know, my scouting buddies in the business to pass along information. But, you know, I try to do as much research as possible. Randy Gregory, the pass rusher at Nebraska, for example, he's a player that at the combine, when I was in Indianapolis, I started to hear some whispers that there was some more, there were some issues there with marijuana and some things that, you know, needed to be checked out. And so I started to dig. And the more I did that, the more I found that there was an issue. There was, you know, he failed two drug tests during the season, the 2014 season at Nebraska. And it got to the point where the coaches were basically like, we stop testing him because he's going to fail. And so, you know, and then it came out later that he failed a drug test at the combine. And then, you know, we saw his stock start to drop, but it's more than just that failed drug test at the combine. So, you know, it's doing as much research as humanly possible. And obviously, you know, it's a lot easier for the NFL teams to do it than us, but I rely a lot on, like I said, my scouting buddies to help me out in terms of, you know, different character flaws that maybe I didn't know about, or, you know, that the public didn't know about. So I really rely on them for that. The character part is as much a part of the evaluation as the on-field evaluation, just because you have to be able to rely on the player. And, you know, we look at guys like Josh Gordon and different players throughout the NFL. If you can't rely on them to be on the field, it doesn't really matter what they can do for you as a player, because you have to be able to rely on them. And so for a guy like PJ Williams out of Florida State, it's just it's like the failed drug test at the combine. It's almost like an idiot test. I mean, if you allow yourself to get in trouble during these few months leading up to the draft, and the pre-draft process is the biggest job interview you'll ever have. And if you allow yourself to get in trouble with a DUI or something more serious, then that really says a lot about you know, how seriously you're taking this job interview. So it's certainly a red flag, and something that will would not shock me at all if PJ Williams has taken off some draft boards because of it.
Yeah, no, that's.
It's crazy.
That's a thing that we, you know, we never know about until we read it last minute that someone's, you know, failed a drug test or something. The quarterback position, Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota are seen as the two clear-cut quarterbacks above everyone else. And we hear Jameis is the most pro-ready. Is the gap that substantial, or do you think that Mariota sitting a year would be the smartest move for him?
You know, I think so, and, you know, there's no way to tell. I don't think these things should be predetermined. You know, who knows? Marcus Mariota could show up at training camp and catch on immediately and be ready from day one. You know, who knows? And that's why I never understood why it came out last year that Jacksonville Jaguars said that, well, Blake Bortles is going to sit the whole year. Well, they said that after they drafted him, and that didn't make sense to me because, you know, that's not a decision that should be made before he even gets into your building and into the camp and, you know, let him get acclimated to your offense and the playbook, and you never know. He might be able to pick it up quickly and just run with it. And with Marcus Mariota, while I think a full year sitting could really benefit him, we'll have to see how he performs once he gets to training camp or, into the building and into, the offense, wherever he ends up going, whether that's two to Tennessee, the Jets at number six. It'll be interesting to see where Mariota ends up. But I'm kind of in a wait and see mode in terms of should he sit for a full year or could he benefit from playing early? And with Jameis Winston, though, I do think he is the most pro ready player, quarterback among these top guys. He's just the game comes so naturally to him. He just turned 21 a few months ago. And while I understand the concerns about the interceptions and, him kind of it's a kind of a blessing and a curse, his willingness to, throw to tight windows and, have a short memory. But I think it's, he's never had to change that before because even though he did throw a lot of interceptions, Florida State still won games. And so he never really had to focus on really fixing that and changing that. And so I think that's something that will come with growth, with added discipline to his passing diet. So I think he will get better in that respect, and I think the interceptions will go down. But like I said, at Florida State, his only loss in 2 years as a starter was his final game in the Rose Bowl. And so he never really had to focus on eliminating those interceptions because, he knew that, okay, I threw an interception, well, I'll come back next series, and I'll throw a similar type of pass into a tight window, and I'll complete it. And so, as Florida State kept winning, Jameis didn't have to change that part of who he was as a passer. And so I think that's something that will change in the NFL and something that, will come to him. But I do think it would not shock me at all if he's a season-opening starter for Tampa Bay, next September.
Yeah. If these two quarterbacks entered the draft last year alongside Blake Bortles, Teddy Bridgewater, Derek Carr, and Manziel, where would you rank them in the midst of those? Just trying to get a comparison more so on Mariota than Winston.
I think Jameis would be the top guy. And well, those who don't know, my top quarterbacks last year, Teddy Bridgewater was my number one overall player in the draft. Blake Bortles was a top 10 player. I think he was number nine on my final board. And so this year, it's tough to always, do this kind of thing when we know what these players look like in the NFL. But I think Jameis would be my number one guy. And then it would come down to Teddy or Mariota for my number two. I'm kind of torn on who would be rated higher, and then Blake Bortles would be fourth on that list. So I think Jameis would be number one for me over the last 2 years.
Okay, cool.
Sorry.
Lost track.
Yeah. Edmund Robinson is attempting to be the first player from Newbury drafted since 1974. Do you think he will get drafted?
He has a chance. I think with his skill set, with his size, he's 6'3", 245, really long arms, and he ran really well. And so those types of players show really well on special teams. And I'm not sure I ever see Robinson developing into a starter, but I do think he could come in and impact special teams right away. And so because of that, I do think there's a chance to get drafted. I gave him a priority free agent grade, but I do think, it would not shock me at all if his name is set at the podium in the sixth or seventh round.
Cool. Yeah, that's just a little bit of history. It's been a long time, 1974, so it'd be good to see him drafted. Shaq Thompson, he's 43 overall on your big board. Would he rank differently if he declared at running back or safety, and by how much?
That's a great question. And it's something that, you know, I guess with that ranking, you know, I'm ranking the player, because I bet you there are teams right now who, if they do draft him, would consider moving him to running back or safety. You know, he's came out and said, I'm a linebacker. You know, that's where he wants to play. That's where he feels most comfortable. And so I think that's where he should play. If he came out and said that's where he feels most comfortable, then he must feel strongly about it. So I do think that's where he should play. But he showed last year at running back that at Washington that, hey, you know what, he can be effective running the ball. And so, you know, I think he might be, because running back is such a tough position, you know, these days to project, that he might be a little bit lower. And safety, I don't see a safety, so I think he'd be lower for a safety. So to me, I think his best position is at linebacker. I think that's where he's probably rated the highest. And so I think linebacker is probably his best position in the NFL, and where he should play, and where I see him being a top 50 type of prospect.
Hmm.
Yeah, awesome. What did you think of the Kevin White v. Kevin White battle?
You know, I thought, and obviously that's West Virginia TCU, I thought it was a little overblown, to be honest with you. When I watched the tape, Kevin White, West Virginia's Kevin White, the wide receiver, he got open on more than a few occasions. Clint Trickett just couldn't get it to him, the quarterback. And so on the final box score, you know, it looks like Kevin White out of TCU, the corner, got the best of the West Virginia wide receiver. But when I watched the coach's tape, the All 22, and I'm watching, and Kevin White, he gained a step on, you know, the other Kevin White quite a few times. I mean, he was open. Clint Trickett just couldn't get it to him. The timing was off. You know, he was dealing with pressure. And so the fact that, you know, Kevin White was able to put together the season that he did, 109 catches with a quarterback who, you know, had his struggles, is even more impressive. And so while I do think, you know, Kevin White at TCU, he did a nice job. You know, he's a tough player, but I don't think it was as big of a deal as some people want to make it out to be, just because, you know, like I said, when I watched the tape, Kevin White was open. The quarterback just couldn't hit him consistently.
Speaking of corners, a lot of people on I call it draft Twitter, they're really high on Jalen Collins. I've seen a few mocks and big boards where he's the second corner off the board. You have him ranked 10th and have a second/third round grade on him. Is there a reason why so many people are so high on him?
Yeah, you know, that's, and for people that, you know, look at my guide, my goal is not to be right on draft day. I think there's a good chance Jalen Collins could go in the first round. But for me, I saw more of a second or third round type of player. You know, you get excited by the size, 6'1 and a half, 203. You know, he's a sub 4'5 athlete. But he needs so much work from a technique standpoint, from a discipline standpoint. I call him a very toolsy type of player. The size, the speed, you see a lot of ability, but at some point you have to translate that ability into, you know, on-field production. Watching his tape, he lost a starting job, you know, quite a few times, and I'm not confident that he's going to be able to come into the NFL and make that, you know, flawless transition. He really needed another year at LSU to hone his skills and get better. And so I get why someone would take him in the first round, because you're banking on that potential. But for me, I need to see it. I need to see more out of Jalen Collins before I would invest a first-round pick on him. And so that's why I gave him a second- or third-round player. The physical skills are there, but the poor technique, the poor discipline, that's why I would wait on taking him until the second or third round.
That's good to know. Staying with defensive backs, is Landon Collins worthy of a top 20 overall pick, or is his value inflated by the weak safety class?
That's another good question, and I think it really comes down to what your team needs. If they need an enforcer at strong safety who can come down and, you know, be a missile against the run, then Landon Collins is your guy. And, you know, he could be in that top 20 discussion. But if you're looking for more of a well-rounded safety who can handle coverage and man coverage, you know, holding up at single high, then I'm not sure he's what you're looking for. You know, he's the type of player that doesn't anticipate the pass very well. He needs to see it unfold. He needs to see the play happening before his eyes, before he can react. And I think that the Ole Miss game, that game film was a perfect example of that. He just had a tough time anticipating the pass, you know, seeing the running back come out of the backfield and then adjusting. He was late on more than a few occasions. And if Landon Collins plays the pass better in that game, Alabama wins, and they don't lose to Ole Miss. And so the season, it turns out to be completely different. And I'm not putting that one game just on Collins, but it's just an example of how you know, his hiccups in pass coverage and pass defense, you know, really stood out to me. And so I think he's a very good player. He's, like I said, an enforcer versus a run. He breaks down really well as a tackler. But in terms of him as holding up a pass coverage, not as well-rounded. And that's why, to me, he's more of a late one, early two as a player.
Cool. We're going to get to some listener questions before we run out of time, and then that will actually kill us if we don't give you some about their questions. So this is from @Sportrepreneur. He wants to know, Eric Rowe, is he a viable safety option for a team like Philly, or is he only worth the time at corner?
Yeah, a player that started 3 years at free safety, and then he moved to corner for a senior year. I think he's absolutely... and I wasn't sure. Watching him on TV, I wasn't sure if he was a corner or a safety or neither or both. I couldn't make up my mind. But then once I got the tape and I was able to study him, I think I see a player who can legitimately do both. And I think we use the word versatility a little too liberally. And, you know, some players, you know, they're either good at one position or another, or they can't play, or they're kind of a tweener. Eric Rowe can legitimately play corner or safety in the NFL, and so I think some teams will be looking at him as a safety prospect. He's a big corner, and that's why I'm keeping him on the outside, a cornerback, but wouldn't shock me at all if he moves back to safety in the NFL.
Next question from @LukeCharles. In your experience, what are the key differences between what a coach looks for in a player and what a personnel manager looks for in a player?
Well, with I think coaches, they're a lot more emotional. They put a lot more stock probably on, you know, leadership, on the impact in the locker room, those intangibles. And that's not to say that, you know, the front office and personnel guys don't take those things seriously, but they're focused more on, you know, the game tape and the skill set and the talent. And so I think from a coach's standpoint, I think they're a little more emotional. They can fall in love with players where, you know, front office guys, it's more of a business to them. They see the players as assets and, you know, guys they can add and cut. You know, mix and match, where coaches, like I said, a little more emotional. They see these guys more as, you know, people and some, you know, guys that are going to, you know, help build the team. And so, and that's not to say that's the same for every coach and every front office guy. It's a lot of overlap there. And so, but if there were one key difference, that's probably what it would be.
Nice. That's a quite interesting question from Luke. So we have a question from @MickeyT95. He says, who, in your opinion, is the most underappreciated player in this draft? Who is not getting nearly enough love for their production on the field?
You know, there's always more than a few guys every year that go overlooked for one reason or another. Probably my favorite this year is Ali Marpet, the offensive lineman out of Hobart, Division III Hobart College. You know, this is a player that went to the Senior Bowl, and he did not waste anyone's time. I mean, he looked like he belonged, blocking guys like Danny Shelton and Henry Anderson. And, you know, he really dominated at the Division III level. And it can be tough at times when you watch his tape because it's going against D3 pass rushers. And, you know, that's really not a test for him. But when you watch the Senior Bowl, you can tell he belongs. And so I think he belongs in that, you know, late second, early third round range. To me, he's my number three guard this year. I'm not sure he starts as a rookie, but I think by the end of his rookie year, I think he'll be in the starting lineup. And I call him a bargain bin version of Zach Martin, a player that can come in and he'll be a long-term starter for you.
Yeah, we actually had Josh Buchanan on. I'm not sure if you know who he is, but he's a small school draft expert, and he rated Ali really highly.
Yeah, and it is tough when you talk about smaller school players because obviously they didn't face the same type of competition as if you go to Ohio State or Alabama. But at the same time, that's what makes the All-Star game so important because for the Senior Bowl, for Ali Marpet, the Senior Bowl was, really was a chance for him to show that he belonged, and he did that. And so a few other small school guys have taken advantage of that opportunity. And if you look around the league, it's just littered with, quote-unquote small school guys. And so a lot of those players can play. It's just the tough part is figuring out, what their draft value is based on what the tape says.
Yeah. We've got a question here from Lucas Ward that we got on our Facebook page. What examples of players you thought were going to be great that didn't pan out and vice versa in previous drafts that you've covered? Do you have some examples?
Yeah, and as evaluators, we all miss on players. We all get some players right. The player that I missed on, a player I thought would be a really good player in the NFL, Brady Quinn, quarterback out of Notre Dame. I wasn't sure if he would be a consistent Pro Bowl type of quarterback, but I thought he'd be at the very worst a consistent starter at the NFL level. And, he didn't go to a great situation in Cleveland, and he never really got the consistent shot to start, and it just never panned out for him. A player that, maybe I, got right, or a player that I thought would, do really well is Antonio Brown. I liked him quite a bit out of Central Michigan, and he far exceeded my expectations, but he was a player I was high on that, I don't think a lot of people were. So, as evaluators, we definitely miss some, but it does feel good to get some right. So there is, both sides of it to that.
Yeah, nice. We've got a question from @DLTurner78 on Twitter. This one's about your favorite player in the draft, Todd Gurley. He wants to know if there's any chance that he falls to Dallas without them having to trade up.
I can't see it. I tell you what, though, if he does fall to 27 and, there's nothing going on with the knee, the injury or his rehab, Dallas, he's not getting past Dallas. But I have a hard time thinking that he gets past a few teams in front of Dallas. He's just too good of a player, too special of a prospect. And even though he is coming off the ACL injury, you just don't pass on special. And so you look at the Miami Dolphins at 14, the Chargers at 17. I can't see Todd Gurley falling all the way down to 27. And so I think Cowboys are going to be in a position where I really think they're going to wait until day two to draft a running back. I think they're going to hope they can strike oil again like they did with DeMarco Murray in the third round a couple years ago. So I think that's what their strategy is going to be entering draft weekend.
With that, you mentioned that, day two and day three. Out of, outside Todd Gurley and Melvin Gordon, is there a particular running back that you think would suit Dallas, the best?
Jay Ajayi out of Boise State, to me, makes a lot of sense. Will he get to pick 60, which is the Cowboys' second-round pick? I'm not sure. That's going to be a big question. But he's a local kid in North Texas, so he's familiar with the area. But he fits what the Cowboys want to do. And so I think, from a power perspective, he has the quickness, he has the instincts. He's getting better and developing as a pass protector. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. But he set a Boise State record for all-purpose yardage last year. And so I think Jay Ajayi is, if he's there at 60, I think that's the pick for the Cowboys. If he's not there at 60, then, is Tevin Coleman, is he still on the board? I think Tevin Coleman would be kind of plan B in that scenario. If both are off the board, then I think maybe they wait till the third round and look at T.J. Yeldon as a player that might fit what the Cowboys want to do. So the good news for the Cowboys is this is the year to need a running back, because there's so many different options, so many different flavors, so many different ways they could go with the running back position.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Dane, when you do mock drafts, do you do them on what you are hearing around the league, or on what personally you want to see or think is a good fit?
It's always what I'm hearing and what I think might happen. You know, I don't think anyone really cares what I would do. You know, if I'm the Buccaneers or the Titans, or you know, they want to know what's my team going to do, or what's the buzz around the league. What do people think that my team's going to do? And so that's why I do all my mock drafts. You know, based on different rumors I hear that from people that I trust. And that's really the tough part this time of year, is weeding through the misinformation and the false information out there, because there is quite a bit of it, and trying to figure out, connect the dots. For example, Chip Kelly in Philadelphia, you know, if you really watch what he's doing and the pro days that he's attending, I think you can make connect the dots and say, okay, you know what, he's interested in a big, well-built, fast cornerback. And so Eric Rowe, Byron Jones, I think those guys make sense. And so the last two mock drafts, that's the direction I've gone. So I think Byron Jones at number 20, if he's there, I think that makes a lot of sense based on what I think the Eagles are looking for right now. So that's the type of thing we're doing, is, you know, trying to connect the dots, trying to, you know, pay attention to what these teams are, what they're doing, and then also listening to, different connections in the league and, what they're telling me, and knowing, what to believe and what not to believe, which, you know, can be a tough part of the whole process.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I'm a Philly fan and I've got no idea what Chip's up to anymore. Leonard Williams is your number one ranked player, but we want to know, who are your favorite players in this draft class? So who's your maybe top three? Who are you most looking forward to watching them develop in the NFL?
It's a good question. There's always, when you watch tape on all these guys, obviously there's over 400 players in my book, that I really wrote about. And so you really, I think, gain a connection with a lot of these players that, you really enjoy watching. For me, Trey McBride at William & Mary, a wide receiver, was a player that I really caught on to last summer, and I've really kind of been, talking about him a lot the last, 8 months or so. And so I'm really eager to see where he ends up. He reminds me a lot of Pierre Garçon when he was coming into the league out of Mount Union. Pierre and I were seniors together at Mount Union, and so I had a chance to watch Pierre every single day. And I think Trey McBride reminds me a lot of who Garçon is as a player. And so I think Trey McBride will be probably underdrafted, but I do anticipate him becoming a starter and really outplaying his draft slot. You could go really position by position, and I could probably pick a player that, I really enjoy watching, and, I can't wait to see them. Stevie Nelson out of Oregon State, the cornerback, is another one who I, really caught on quickly and, instantly fell in love. He's another one of my draft crushes because the way he plays the game, he's so competitive. It doesn't matter what size receiver he's going against. He's going to give it his all and, really make it as tough as possible for that receiver to catch passes. And so I think Stevie Nelson, another guy who he probably will be drafted somewhere in the third round, but I bet he outplays that draft slot and he ends up being a steal for whoever gets him in the third round this year. But for me, if I had to, pick one guy, it'd probably be Todd Gurley, just because there's no boring tape with Todd Gurley. Every time he touches the ball, you get a feeling that something's about to happen. And, you could tell he was just born to be a running back. Everything about him is so natural, from the power to the vision. He has grown man strength. So he's really fun to watch on tape. And so I think even when you watch him return kicks, you get excited because you know something's about to happen. And so for me, a lot of players in this draft, a lot of guys that, I love to watch. But for me, if I had to, pick one guy, it'd probably be Todd Gurley.
Cool. We started asking you about quarterbacks, so I think we will finish asking you about quarterbacks before we let you go to your other commitments. Outside the top two quarterbacks, Winston and Mariota, what quarterback do you think has the best chance, put in the right situation to have not a nice career, but at least be on the field for a substantial amount of time?
And that's the tough part about this quarterback class is figuring out who's that number three guy. Obviously, Jameis and Marcus are 1-2 or 2-1, depending on how you view the top two quarterbacks. But that number three quarterback, I think that's, teams are split around the league. Evaluators are split. For me, I put Brett Hundley as that number three quarterback. And so I guess, that would be my answer if he's my number three guy, because all the physical skills are there. You just have to try and develop what's going on above the shoulders, really hone that talent. I think, he reminds me a little bit of a Jason Campbell type of a prospect. So I think, I'm not sure you have a consistent starter, but I think you have a player that can come in and, at worst be, develop into a backup, a player that can come in and win you games if you need him to. And so I think, being compared to a Jason Campbell isn't the worst thing, for a prospect. Now, is it what Brett Hundley wants to be? Probably not. I mean, he's been told he's a future first-round pick since he was, growing up. So it's going to be a little bit of a uphill climb, but Hundley has the football character and, all the physical tools that you want. Bryce Petty is really the wild card in terms of that second tier of quarterbacks, because another guy where you like the physical ingredients, but he comes from such a non-NFL offense where it was pitch and catch. He wasn't asked to move around a lot. I really think it's going to be a rude awakening for Bryce Petty. But, if he is allowed to sit and learn and, by year two, by year three, Bryce Petty has potential to be a player that can start in the NFL. And so if Bryce Petty goes to the right situation and gets the right coaching and, is able to come along at his own pace, then I think Bryce Petty could absolutely be that guy. But like I said, I don't expect to see Bryce Petty on the field, or I hope I don't see him on the field for at least 2 or 3 years, because that's what he's going to need to be a consistent NFL player.
Cool. Any last words, Josh, before we let Dan go?
No, just thank you for your time. It's been terrific.
It's crazy how quickly you can bring up a player's height, 40-time wingspan, straight away. Like, you can't even hear you shuffling paperwork or anything. We can't even remember the questions to ask you, so it's quite extraordinary stuff.
Well, I know. I appreciate you guys having me on. The NFL draft is... Yeah, it's my passion. It's what I love doing. And so I love interacting with everyone, whether it's on Twitter or, whatever way I can, talk with people. Because it's all subjective, Like I said, no two eyes see the same thing. And so it's fun to, debate and discuss all these players with different people. But, I want to know what you see. I want to know, what you think these players are going to be. And so it really makes it fun to debate. And then a year, 2 years from now, we can look back and say, well, what were we wrong about? What were we right about? And that's how you grow as an evaluator. So this is a really fun business, and, I enjoy talking about it. So, again, appreciate you guys having me on.
Awesome. Thanks, Dane. And Australia is thankful, and they'll be following you closely.
Great. I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, mate. See you later. Wow. What a guy.
I don't know what to say.
Incredible guy. We had technical difficulties. He hung around, emailed us back, said, look, I've got another 15 minutes.
He's going to a real professional program right now.
Yeah, so. He's on some sort of Giants Big Blue network after this. So he started the day with us, so I'm happy to say that.
I'm happy to say he started at his peak today.
Absolutely.
I'm definitely happy to go with that.
Absolutely. And he does mention interacting with Twitter. He is one of the best guys on Twitter. Every question pretty much gets answered. He's on it constantly. And we really appreciate him coming on. And look, we don't stay up till 2 a.m. in the morning for anyone. So that's how much we like Dane.
It is 2 a.m. now.
It is 2 a.m. We've been here all night together. This is not the first night we've shared together. Woot.
Wow. Anyway.
Yep. All right.
That's not true.
Yes. We seem to have lost our composure here.
It's 2 a.m.
As you can see, Dane has mentioned a ton of players, an absolute ton of players. So hopefully we covered everything. We mentioned pretty much every position group possible, I hope, except maybe the pass rushers, which probably we should have asked him about. But we've got Josh, I can't even say his name, Liskowitz, coming in on Saturday to chat to us, and he will talk about the pass rushers in depth then.
I'm sure he will. And maybe probably punters and kickers.
Yep.
They're people too.
They are people too. All right, so apologies if this show's a little bit stop and start, choppy and changey, but we had some technical difficulties with Dane, which he did apologise for, just the class that he is. So please, you know, download, share, tell a friend to tell a friend about us having Dane on. And that's all. That's all. That's all for the show.
Yeah, we'll try to be as responsive as Dane on Twitter.
Yeah, we generally are.
On Woot and Why.
Yes.
And Josh Woot. And
I'm at JYNFL. And wow, we're on Instagram now, at NFL yes. Podcast.
Yes.
I got that handle. I'm taking it. I wanted Woot and Why, but I thought at NFL Podcast was the best way to maximise our brand.
Maximise our brand.
Yes. I'm good. Ciao.